Yeah, I texted Julie midweek and I said, hey, my talk's about the collision course with faith. Can you give me some Power Man 5000? Anyone know what that is?
Yeah.
Wife. It might be a little too raucous for, I mean, we're a pretty rocking group here, but it might have been a little too heavy.
I gotta say, great message in the song.
Yeah.
It had no melody and no chords. I didn't know what to do with it.
That's why I like it, because I can't, I don't know how to play that well. So I'm like banging on it. Yeah. This is what it's like when worlds collide.
Yes.
Oh, you're ready to go, because I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't know how to make that work.
Julie and I are going to be at the Comedy Club this Thursday at 9 p.m. Oh, I made it. I made it today. And you guys are like, yeah, Finn, you got to talk at 11. What are you talking about? And I'm like, well, I had 20 kids at my house yesterday. 20 at one point. My wife and I threw a birthday party for our 8-year-old. And it was loud. It got loud. It got louder than this suit I'm wearing. And it was, whew, God, I mean, literally, I'm sure a lot of you have kids, but my God, they take it out of you, don't they? If I'm being real. And I knew his birthday was going to be on Saturday. My talk was going to be on Sunday. And being the good church-going boy, I knew that the word was faith. And so I looked into that, and I was like, man, I think one of my last talks was about faith when I delved into the deep, deep spirituality of George Michael. And don't worry, I'm going to leave the music up to the band today. But I thought about it, and I was like, all right, faith, how can I come back and look at that at a different angle than I did last time? And so I wrote this. I'm also knee-deep in my C-class Metaphysics 1, so I wrote this talk ahead of time, and I always do my talks for my wife. She has now deemed herself my ministerial manager, and so she'll give me notes. She'll vet my talks, and so I did it for her, and she looked at me, and when I was done, she was like, what was that? What was that? She's like, that was really heady and a little bit dark. And she's like, I don't think people are going to get that. What are you talking about? And I was like, man, my ego was hurt. But I stepped away and I looked at it and I was like, she had some really good points because I realized that I was trying to write smart. I was trying to deliver a message that would impress you. And you'd be like, wow, Finn, you're so deep. You're so good. You're so metaphysical. And I looked at that for a minute. It's like, wow, that is a recurring theme or motif, if you will, in my life and probably in a lot of our lives. We don't have faith that we're good enough as we are. We can't come as we are because we want to layer all this stuff on top of it. Like, I want to impress them. I want to do that. I am not good enough. And it's all just baloney. And so I stepped back from that, and, you know, I was worrying, like, will I deliver a good talk? You know, I'll have time to do that. And worry is the opposite of faith. You know, if love and faith are kind of commingled, if love is the nurturing, loving mother, worry is that belligerent drunk uncle that keeps just like tapping at you and bothering you, which actually reminds me of this Irish proverb that I love. I was going to do it in my Irish accent, but the manager, she told me I shouldn't do it. What do y'all think? Do it? Irish accent? All right. Okay. An Irishman's philosophy on life. In life, there's only two things to worry about. Either you're sick or you're well. If you're well, there's nothing to worry about. If you're sick, there's two things to worry about. Either you live or you die. If you live, there's nothing to worry about. If you die, there's two things to worry about. Either you go to heaven or you go to hell. If you go to heaven, there's nothing to worry about. If you go to hell, you'll be too busy shaking hands with your friends. You won't have time to worry. I slipped into a little Irish or Italian gangster at the end there. I don't know. But that's, you know, we do that, right? We worry. We always tend to worry. And, you know, you got to love the Irish repressed Catholic guilt, right? It's like we know there's no, yeah, My last name's Finn. I have dealt with it my entire life. Hello, my name is Michael Finn. I am a recovering, repressed Catholic. But we worry. We tend to worry. We know there's no hell, right? But we think that if we don't achieve something, if we don't do something, then we're not going to get what we want. And that's the paradox we face as human beings on this spiritual journey, on this plane. We tell ourselves that if we achieve this one goal, if we get to this one spot of enlightenment, all of our suffering, all of our pain will vanish and go away. We know it's not true. We know that the journey never ends. It's daily work every single day. Which actually reminds me of something else I was going to leave out because it is a little bit dark, but I think it's poignant. It's from Cormac McCarthy. Bless his soul, he left us this year, but I judge he was one of America's finest literary figures. And this is from his dystopian novel, The Road. And in it he says, "No one really wants to be here, but no one really wants to leave either." And yeah, it's sad, but it's true. How many times do we want something or do something? It doesn't work out. Like, the problem is the outcomes don't match what your mind had in mind. Or we look at ourselves every single day and we're like, I wish I was this, I wish I was that. We constantly berate ourselves. But on the other side of that, we're scared. Yes, we don't believe in hell, but we don't know what's after this life or what's on the other side of our suffering here. And I got to really experience that firsthand with my father when he was passing. He had fought this long, and that's the thing, he fought. I'm going to say he fought cancer. We fight so much. We fight everything. We judge we got to fight. And the truth is we need to just accept and widen our flow, widen our space for spirit, for God. And I saw him at the end of his journey here physically, helping take care of him, and he was at the point where the cancer had ravaged his face. He was a literal shell of the man he was. And he fought. He couldn't let go. I judge he didn't have any real reason for staying because there was no healing for him on this plane. The healing had to come after this. But he stuck and fought it out, and he was on so many drugs, so many pain pills. And I looked at this man who had punched his card every single week. He went to church every Saturday. He tithed the lot. He was a God-fearing man. And I talked to him a little bit towards the end when he loosened up and let the reins go. And he just told me, he's like, I was just indoctrinated. And I don't know, I can't really project what he meant by that, but what takeaway for me was that he lived his entire life in fear. And that his faith wasn't really robust enough when he got time to go. And it did a number on me. It did a number on my faith. And so that's the thing, guys. We're in this place, we're on this plane, and we get stuck with our limited beliefs. We don't believe enough in ourselves. We're afraid on what's on the other side. And how do we deal with that? How do we embrace that? And it's in this Irish proverb, the juxtaposition of that and that Cormac McCarthy quote, that it's a paradox we face, because it's been my experience, and I'm sure most of y'all's, that we worry. We worry about where we are and where we're going to go. And if I don't like it here, I'm too afraid to change. I'm too afraid to adjust my frequency, adjust my beliefs. I'm worried about what's on the other side of it, so I'm just going to stay here in this spot, in this body, and be miserable, not experience my wholeness. Which also reminds me of Hippocrates' quote, father of modern medicine. He said, before you heal a man, ask if he's willing to put down what's making him sick. And it's so true. What are we willing to put down? What cross were we willing to let go of? You know, this ideology of like, there's this goodness or this badness doesn't really leave us a lot of options, does it? There's a third option that I tend to forget about a lot. It's the option that everything is well, always has been, and always will be. And so to take the burden of that extreme leap of faith off of ourselves, we put our faith into something that's outside of us. Be God, Allah, Spirit, whatever you want to name it. We make this scapegoat that we're willing to put all of our stuff onto, and then we're willing to fight about it. ourselves and others. And I don't think I'm at a position to make a truly educated statement about what's going on in Gaza right now. But it's supposed to be the Holy Land, right? And something miraculous must have happened a couple millennia ago. I'm not refuting that. But it's in the definition that we struggle with the problem. Holy Land. Every land, everybody on this plane is holy. But we don't see that. We don't recognize it. We have all this prejudice and judgments. Every day, I struggle with it. But you see it on the grandiose scale of what's going on over there right now. And people have been fighting and killing each other for eons to prove their definition of what God is to them, what God should be to them, and what it should mean to you. And it's just a fallacy. The faith resides in ourselves, knowing that we're enough so we don't have to lash out. We're the ones that mess things up because the universe is in grand harmony. Everything is structured. We know this. We go into nature. There's opposites. There's positives. There's this divine grand structure. We're the ones that mess it up. Everything will work out. I promise, even if our human mind has trouble grappling with it right now. You know, how do we learn this chaos, this need to just bump against our edges and everyone else? And some of you may argue that, well, that's creation, the Big Bang. And I'll give you that. I'll give you that. That happens so that we can be free now. We don't need to bump into everything in a violent way. Because we get into a corner and we feel scared and threatened, and that's when we lash out. In the amazing writings by Charles Fillmore, Prosperity, he says, "It is quite possible to possess a reality that cannot be seen, touched, or comprehended by any of the outer senses. It is faith when we are fully conscious of things not seen and have the assurance of things not yet manifest." In other words, faith is that consciousness in us of the reality of the invisible substance and the attributes of the mind by which we lay hold of it. We must realize that the mind makes things real. Just the thought, just a mere idea, we sometimes lightly say, little thinking that these thoughts and ideas are the eternal realities from which we build our life and our world. So with that in mind, dwell and lay your thoughts claim to the world that you want, the world that you can create inside of yourself first, then it comes outward. Have faith that you are enough to envision a higher, more divine iteration of yourself and therefore your world. It's about allowing. It's about setting the attention and allowing the divine blueprint to unfold. You know, when some of us may be gardeners in here, when we plant a seed, there's divine intelligence in that seed. And we plant it in the soil. And we got to make sure the conditions are right. The ground is fertile. Give it a chance. But we don't sit there and get down and yell at that seed and berate it. Like, come on, seed. Let's grow. Come on, do it. You're not growing fast enough. No, we sit back. I know it's silly, right? We sit back and we let that divine blueprint unfold. We got nothing to do with it. We trust in it. And more often than not, I know we can't predict the weather, but more often than not, that seed does its thing. Just like we're supposed to. We have that divine intelligence inside of us. So just quit pumping the gas. Step back a little bit and let yourself unfold in the divine way that you should. James 1:6 said, "But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind." Jesus said, "The Father and I are one." What that means is you and everything is one. There can be no separation. There's not even one. There's a zero because there's nothing outside of you. It's all in you. This is our reality. And Hafiz, the 14th century Iranian poet, wrote, "Just sit there right now. Don't do a thing. Just rest. For your separation from God is the hardest work in this world." So can we truly have faith that there is nothing to worry about? It's a leap. I get it. Trust me. I'm not there. I don't got it figured out. But a couple months ago when the great Reverend Howard Caesar was here, he recounted this I thought it was fantastic. This fantastic allegory about our viewpoints on life, beginnings, endings, and afterlife. And it was the metaphor of two twins inside their mother's womb. Some of you guys are here, maybe remember, but God, it really stuck with me. And one of the twins was super pro in utero. His whole position was, we can't leave. We got everything we need in here. We're fed. And if we leave this place, it's the end of the road for us. And the other baby was like, hey, hold on a second. I don't know. I think this is just the beginning. Let's not limit ourselves to this small little space. Let's see what's on the other side. And I'll be damned if that isn't just the most poignant metaphor. We don't know. You know what the hell we're talking about? We just think we do and spout all this stuff off. Just trust. No one can remember when we were kids, when we were little babies. We had nothing to do with it. Maybe our soul did. Maybe we made an agreement that we can't remember here. But what have we done to let things unfold? We just get in the way. Have the faith to ride that wave. You know, we grapple too much with the question of why. Why are we here? Why did things happen this way? Why didn't it go the way I wanted? Instead of the statement of I am. There's so much power in that statement. I am. I am here. I'm here now. There's infinite possibilities of what can happen after that. But the problem is the mind. As we move forward, we pick up, you know, Rolling Stone gathers no moss, but dang, we sure pick stuff up as we go, don't we? That baggage we keep that weighs us down. From the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch by Hunang, he says, if we allow our thoughts, past, present, and future, to link up in a series, we put ourselves under restraint. But on the other hand, if we just see that there's this thought, then this thought, then this thought, then this thought, you are liberated. And that's the most simple and poignant way of explaining how we accumulate our baggage, our construct, our identifications, our ego, our BS. A belief system. Or the other thing. We let our belief system get in the way, which is nothing more than betting your future based on past events. Past events that have nothing to do with what's happening right now in the present. It dictates how much we're willing to love, how much we're allowing love to come into us, and how much we're willing to receive, how much good we allow. You know, we walk around with this shield that we think is going to protect us. And we developed it in our formative years, and we carry it with us the rest of our lives. And we walk, and we think we're blocking all the badness. No, we're blocking the goodness that's trying to get in. What we think about God is going to make the difference between a haunting fear that weighs us down and keeps us back, or an exhilarating strength and inspiration that stimulates us to our highest achievement. That beautiful quote was from Reverend Paul Hasselbeck in his book, Metaphysics 1, which we're using now as a basis for our class. And in the book, he talks about our BS, our adjacent possible, and our not possible. And if you think about it like a concentric circle, here we got our BS, we got our adjacent possible, and the not possible. So as you can imagine, the BS is what we believe, our long-held viewpoints, beliefs. The adjacent possible is right next to it. It's something that, hey, maybe we can possibly integrate. I don't know. Let me think about this. And our not possible is like, no way. Ain't happening. I remember when I came here about 6 years ago. A lot of you know the story. My wife drugged me. God bless you. And I came in. I was like, okay. I had a lot of, even though it didn't resonate with me, I just had this negative belief system, stuff I'd been taught. So I come here, and I'm like, okay, it's church. All right, I'm going to church. But mine's like, oh, it's not Catholic church. Remember that stuff they told you, that Catholicism is the only true way to God, to Jesus, to heaven? What if they're true? What if it's true? The drunken uncle back there just yapping away. So I kept coming back, and started to kind of make sense. It started to resonate with me, okay? Can I get down with I am God? God is me. We're all one. I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. I think I will believe that. Because what our mind tells us to believe, that's the truth. That's the truth. So that started to integrate into my belief system, the adjacent possible. But if you'd have told me 3 or 4 years ago I'd be up here on the stage talking to you about it, maybe teaching a little bit, I would have filed that under not possible. So the point is, who knows what's around the corner? What goodness is there for you? We don't know. We don't know. Have faith. You know, we cling to the past to fight with the present. We want to make things like they were, you know. I don't have faith that this next thing will be as good as the last. And so we walk around with this cloak, this shield, and we're trying to recreate the past. And it limits us. I mentioned last talk, our beloved corgi, Hank, had passed away. He'd been with us for 10 years. And at the time, it was a really beautiful passage, ceremony. I felt really good about it. But after we put him in the ground, you know, I felt this heaviness. I was like, man, he represented such an amazing time stamp or passage of my life and my wife. I mean, he was there. It was our first real commitment together. We got him after we'd been dating for about a year. He was there when my mom passed away. He was there when my dad passed away. He was there when we got married. He was there when we brought our first baby home, second baby home. And it's like, oh, man, like, God. It's all just flashing before me. It's never going to be the same. The kids have been wanting to get a new dog, and Leah and I have wanted to, too, but we had reservations. It's a lot more work, you know. All these excuses to block the love. Randomly, about 2 weeks ago, there was this Facebook post to pick up this rescue dog. There was a litter of these dogs that needed homes. I was like, let's just do it. She's like, what? Let's do it. Let's go. Not like me. This is my yes year. And and so we go and get the dog and bring him home. Georgie, little Georgie. We don't know what he is. We think he's an Anatolian Shepherd. He's going to be huge. But his love is huge, too. He's going to be George Finn, M.D., when he gets older anyway. It's a dumb joke. But we bring him home, and I catch myself the first 3, 4, or 5 days looking at him and comparing him to Hank. Now, I don't have faith that he's going to fill this home with love. He's not doing things the way Hank did. His personality is different. And I see myself just limiting this love. I'm blocking it. I'm like, what's that about? But we do that. We do that all the time. If we have people that leave us, if a lover steps out, if the loved one passes, we're like, man, that's it. I'm never going to love like that again because I love that person the way I love them. And the truth is your mind dictates who you love because it tells you that. Your mind tells you who to love because the truth is, yes, you love that person. You love that thing. You love that memory. But what you're really doing is you're loving the divine, inexhaustible love that is out there for us, that is in us. So, no, you are in love with creation. You may be in love with that person, but this is temporal. We're talking about absolute truth. That is a love that is inexhaustible. Amen. So let's have faith. We don't need to do that. Let's have faith that something is coming that's going to be greater, that's going to widen us, that's going to open us up to higher possibilities. I've been extremely blessed these past couple talks to have these little divine interventions, but just an awareness of what's out there and the goodness that can manifest for me. And it's perfect timing because I'm talking, but also I love to say it out loud and share with you because A, I love to share, and then B, it really solidifies and helps me in my faith. Like, this did happen. This is true. So, I got a guy. His name's David. He's a spiritual medium. He's an intuit. And he's the reason why Lee and I got married, because she had a reading with him about a week or two before we met. And he told her, he said, Leah, pay attention to butterflies. And she's like, okay, David. All right. And she's at the airport, I'm at the airport, and when she saw me, she said she got butterflies. I mean, and she said that had he not said that to her, she might not have paid attention to that. So he's the reason we got married, and so it only made sense that he officiated our wedding. It's a wonderful arc. Being the stodgy, BS-filled guy that I am, I was skeptical. But after my pops passed, I had a reading with him, and my dad came through in the reading. And you've got to understand that David isn't a charlatan. He's not some shyster, like, slick guy. He's this true blue, blue-collar Bostonian, heart of gold. Just, you can't put on airs. He is who he is. In the middle of the reading, he's like, I get this sense, you know, your dad's here. And his demeanor changed, his voice changed, and he looked at me, and he said, son, I have finally overcome the irrational fear of death. And that quote stuck with me because it just goes to show that it's like that quantum entanglement, right? Just because this looks this way doesn't mean it's bad. He's over here, and he's coming back to show me that it's okay. It's okay. Like what Fillmore said, have faith in the things unseen and unseen. It all works out. And so ever since that moment, I have a tune-up with David every year and a half, 2 years, call him, hey, what's going on? What am I missing? What do I need to know? And I talked to him about a month and a half ago. And he's like, hey, do you know anyone named Shirley? You got a Shirley in your life? I was like, no, David, I don't think I ever met a Shirley. He's like, all right, well, just pay attention. Pay attention to Shirley. I'm like, all right. About 5 days later, driving in my truck, I get a phone call. The caller ID comes up. And big capital letters on the caller ID, Shirley. And I'm like, you best believe I'm answering that call. So I clicked on it, and it's this woman that is looking for a place to live. And guess what? I got a place for you to live because a tenant of ours stepped out early, broke the lease, and I was kind of like, all right, I'm going to have to do a lot of, I'm not prepared for this, it's not ready, I got to advertise, I'm gonna eat about 2 or 3 months of rent. She came, saw the place, loved it, I did a few touch-ups, quick and easy. Her and her lovely family are there now. I mean, come on. Come on. And the thing is, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. But what I didn't do, I didn't put any negative energy, negative fears into limitations or worry. And guess what? Guess what? The universe provided. Provided. And I swear to you, it always will. In the 48th verse of the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu says, in pursuit of knowledge, every day something is added. In the practice of the Tao, every day something is dropped. Less and less you need to force things until finally you arrive at non-action. When nothing is done, nothing is left undone. So don't let intellect, your thoughts override this deep, profound, intrinsic wisdom that lies in all of us. Whatever, don't let your flame of faith get extinguished by anything on this worldly plane. Whatever hardship you're facing, whatever challenge you're going through right now, I guarantee you that if you can just breathe into it, something magnificent will be on the other side of it. And I don't care what my people, the Irish, say. There's not two things to worry about. There's nothing to worry about. I love you all. Let's take these thoughts into meditation. So, if you can just sit there and just feel the weight of your body in the chair. No matter where you are on your journey, if you're at the beginning or you judge or the middle, wherever, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. We are eternal beings of creation. We are the breath of the cosmos. Breathe into this apparatus. We are thought, we are air. We are light. And nothing, no thing should ever make this journey feel heavy. I know there are times when we might get stuck. We might feel stuck. We might feel alone. We're never alone. Look inward. Take a breath into your solar plexus, into your root chakra. And just feel that energy vibrating. Feel your hands. Do you feel that energy moving around? Feel the top of your head. Feel right above your head. You are this force field that we don't even comprehend. So breathe into it. Don't impede it. Just allow it to be. Allow yourself to grow into it. Know that you are loved. Know that love is the form of creation that we all have inside of us. Now imagine your energy just giving yourself a big hug. Hold it there. And just feel that and know that you are always, always loved and always cared for. There's nothing you have to do to fight for it. There's nothing you have to do to deserve it. It is your birthright. And with that knowledge, go forth and spread the goodness like seeds all over this earth. And I promise what you reap will be blessing upon blessing upon blessings. Take one more breath in. And let out anything that does not serve you. I love you all very much, and so it is.